Jordan, and this is Yes But Why Podcast. Yeah.
I mean, improvisation, my experience, I guess I started 33 years ago at the Second City Theatre in Toronto, where I lived for 15 years, because I'm Canadian, but I live now in Dublin, Ireland. That's where I'm talking to you from. That experience changed my life, completely changed everything for me, set me on a different path. I didn't know it was going to do that at the time, but it certainly did. I grew up watching, SCTV, with John Candy and Eugene Levy and Catherine O'Hara, and I was watching that in my early 20s and loving it. And then I moved to Toronto I grew up in the Niagara Falls, Hamilton, Ontario area, where a lot of improvisers like Martin Short and Eugene Levy came from. And that's, in fact, I think that was my hometown where I was born and they were born. And I mean, they're considerably older than myself. But anyway, when I moved to Toronto, I was working as a graphic artist and as an illustrator, freelance. And that's quite a lonely job because you're very much on your own all the time. And what the impetus was, a childhood friend of mine moved to Toronto, and I didn't know anybody. So after about a year, I had a very, very small social circle, and I had spent so much time on my own working as a visual artist, and so I realized that part of me wasn't developed very well at all. And he got in touch and phoned me, and he said, "Do you want to go to Second City Theatre and take classes in improvisation?" And I said, what are you talking about? And he said, "Well, we go see the shows. They do classes. They do workshops." I said, "Why? Why would we do that?" He said, "To meet girls, you idiot." I said, oh, sure, yeah. But it turned out that it was really where I developed my first Toronto-based social network and simultaneously began to develop skill sets that they were greatly lacking in myself. And I found that most everybody there wasn't there to be an actor. They were there for a multitude of reasons, not dissimilar to mine. In a lot of cases, people learning desiring to learn to creative thinking and collaboration, some of them just trying to overcome shyness, all kinds of reasons, and I grabbed hold of it, or it grabbed hold of me, more likely, and I began to perform. I was invited to audition for the Main Stage Company, but by that time I was moving more into writing, and out of the Second City improv work came the sketch comedy writing, and I was in I co-created a Herald long form troupe, and I had the absolute honor to very briefly study with Del Close when he came to Toronto.
Whoa. What's that dude like? Crazy.
Well, he was brilliant. It was an amazing experience, and he and I got along really, really well, and I loved it. And he looked at us the way we were doing a Herald, and he tweaked it, and it was quite a high level workshop, and I loved it. I never forgot any of it. And then I began to write. I began to write sketches and short films and plays. And then ultimately, I began to work in the dramatic arts more so than the visual arts. That led me to Ireland because I was asked to write a screenplay, for an animated film. And I had been here before, and I'd always wanted to live in Europe. And I came over to do the research for the film, and I just forgot to go back.
They were like, "Hey, we need you to write it in Dublin. It's really important for you to use our desk that we bought in Dublin."
Yeah. No, I just stayed. Yeah, because it's a very funny place. The Irish are very funny, funny people. I think 800 years of British occupation and a famine, that tends to make you pretty funny. You have to be, and they're very resilient. And I just stayed, and I'm Irish. I'm Irish now as well as Canadian. So and I work in the film industry.
Like officially?
So, yeah.
Oh, right,
officially.
On. Nice. Yeah. Have you lived in Ireland now longer than you lived in, you know, Canada?
No. I've been here going on 19 years. But it was Second City. It was the Second City experience of studying improvisation there, and that which led me to writing, which led me here. And when I got here, there wasn't any improv training. I mean, there were some troops, you know, fiddling around with it, but there wasn't anything really very formal. And I produced a play here by my old Canadian comedy partner, Nick John, who teaches at Second City Chicago now. And he's always asking me to come over there and do something with him. And I produced his one-man show, and I knew that if I did that, it was within the Dublin Fringe, I would meet a lot of people, and I did. And I met this nice couple, and they had a little theater company, and she's American. And when she heard that I had studied at Second City and worked with people like Dell, she said, "Yo, you must put up a workshop. We must put up a workshop for you in improv. No one's doing it." And of course, everything snowballed after that. So now I have my own business, Dawson Drama Works, and I do regular workshops, and all the workshops end in a live show. And it's, in fact, I've got one coming up in a couple of weeks. So
do you do it like monthly or something, or like a quarterly, your show?
Yeah, more like quarterly, you know. Yeah, and like you, different levels. You know, beginner and intermediate, and then there's a much more advanced one, and there's a long form one, and in addition to improv training, I also taught acting for years, dramatic acting, and though I'm not doing much of that anymore, I'm more focusing on improvisation and teaching writing. In fact, I just finished a writing course last night, teaching a course.
Tell me about your approach to that without giving away what people are paying for when they take your workshop, of course. But like you said, you learned at Second City and then you started writing. Do you always use improv as a beginning base for all of your writing, or am I misunderstanding how Second City teaches writing?
Well, I wouldn't say I always use it. No, I think the greatest thing I learned from the experience at Second City was the necessity to say yes and collaborate, because, you know, one of the things about writing, particularly in writing in for media like film and television, is that it's highly collaborative. It's not like writing a novel where you're on your own. And even if you are writing a novel, you should be working with editors giving you feedback. So I guess what I say, it taught me most of all to be collaborative. And again, as I say, media writing for film and TV, which is what I do. I also work as a story consultant and as a script editor. So I'm consulting with working on other people's writing. And I suppose what it embedded in me was the need for strong characterization and structure to scenes. And so how does it inform my improvisation? Well, one of the things that I remember Dell saying was, you know, it's all about the truth. And he was very emphatic about not trying to be funny. And he was, if somebody deliberately did, he'd make you sit down. And how the humor came out of the well-constructed scenarios with and the characterization. And so that really, for me, improvisation is character driven, and it's all about telling stories. So I have quite a narrative emphasis in my improvisation. And one of the things that
I'm sorry to cut you off. Did you ever study any of the Keith Johnstone narrative improv stuff?
A little bit, yeah. I worked with some of my early facilitators at Second City had worked with him at the Loose Moose in Calgary, right. And I did some of the short form, some of the theater sports. Did that for years, and that was a great way to cut your teeth. You know, get up on stage and make a fool of yourself and have fun, and lose the ego. You know. But yes, I suppose some of it was Johnston based. No question about it. I like what Dell was doing with the Herald. It was a bit mad. I liked the Armando very much so. And so what I did was, since I've been here, I created my own long form, which is sort of an amalgam of the Armando and the Herald.
And, oh, yeah?
And, Yeah. And my students insisted, you got to give it a name. I said, oh, no, please. I said, please, no, you got to give it a name. And so it's called the JD. And so that's which is how I sign my emails. That's my nickname here.
I know.
Yeah, I got my own long form. So we've done this on stage. Yeah, and it's
the
worked.
Other ones have guys' names. Why not? I thought you were legitimately going to be like, it's called the John. I was like,
yeah. No. And they said, cool, that's what it should be. I'm, oh, God, it's just
awesome.
Anyway, and it's complicated, but yet not. And it's one of those things you got to know your stuff, and you got to know something about story, and you got to have, you know, the great, like, one of the great things about improv, as you know, is that and how it develops a real mental emotional agility, particularly mentally in the area of memory. You got to remember what the hell just happened, and what were the plot points, and whether, you know, and how you can connect everything. And so, and also, I suppose while I was at Second City, I was also going to the cinema a lot, and I've been an avid cineast for years. So all of those things sort of dovetailed into working in the dramatic arts, and primarily now, as opposed to the visual arts. So what I don't perform that much anymore, except that I do MC my troupe's shows, my workshop shows. So there's certainly, as you well know, a very big improv component to that. And it's always a lot of fun.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
It's amazing. Yeah.
Well, I love teaching, and I love it when I have a recital show. You know, it's like, they finished. You did it. I'm so proud. Like,
yeah, me too.
So
yeah.
Great about it.
Isn't it great to see how nervous they are, and then afterwards how excited, and you say to them, so what were you nervous about? And they say, yeah, it's exactly. And you know that light's above their head, and it's not going to go out. You know, it's a great experience. The other area that I worked in that I think you'll find interesting, and which it sort of evolved organically, as all things should, is that I was doing improv work in the area of wellness, and particularly mental health. And you'll see something about that on my website, on the DawsonDramaWorks.com website. I was approached a number of years ago to do a course for three nursing students at Dublin City University who were in their final year, and they were doing a thesis type project, a group project. And they wanted to, they're all into drama, and they wanted a dramatic arts workshop that where the participants would be mental health service users. And but also they wanted it open to service providers and caregivers as well. And they were basing it upon a model from Finland where the basic credo was hats at the door, meaning that nobody was to know who was the service user and who was the service provider and who was a caregiver. So the playing field was completely level. And I said, well, that's the only way I roll anyway. You know, it's all about inclusion. And they approached me because my name kept coming up, and apparently, and I had a meeting with them. And I began to work with people who clearly had some severe mental health issues, and not that I was ever privy to what they were specifically, but and also there were psychologists in the group and occupational therapists and nurses and a psychiatrist or two, and all of them doing the same kinds of games and exercises. And I realized that improv was the perfect way, the perfect tool to use, the perfect thing, because first of all, we couldn't really use scripts and plays because they weren't capable of memorizing stuff, and that wasn't really what it was about. They wanted to have an experience which opened them up. And one of the things that was interesting that's common through most of the mental health conditions and most illnesses is anxiety and the feelings of isolation. And you know yourself with improv, when you're up there playing a game, you have to engage. It's all about that. And there were a lot of these people feel very, very isolated and alone, even in a crowd, as many of us can do. And here they were up on their feet, and I'm watching someone who I can figure out pretty quickly is a service user playing a silly, wonderful improv game with an occupational therapist or a psychologist who's no better at it than them and loving it. And it was extraordinary to see the reactions in these people. And it did so well that I did more of these workshops for St. James Hospital Dublin for their mental health division. And it was one of the most rewarding things I've ever done. And it was it was pretty awesome. People were laughing. Someone who said to me, I realize I haven't laughed in almost a year. Can you imagine that? Yeah.
Yeah.
One young fella came up to me, and he'd gotten ill in his early 20s, and he was Colin Farrell handsome. He had wanted to be an actor, and then he got ill. And he came up to me, and he said, JD, I said, yeah, what is it? He said, after these classes, I feel like I'm floating. I said, well, that's better than falling. He said, yeah, it is. So it was very rewarding. So
yeah,
very much.
Did you go back and do other experiences with the same group, or have you done other things like that? Or was that just sort of like a one-time project that you enjoyed?
I did, I think, about three or four of those workshops for St. James Hospital, and I did one for last year, for Dublin City University's Recovery College, and where people who are going through any kind of recovery, it could be, they could be grieving, it could be an accident, it could be a recovery from an addiction, can go to what is called now a college, and where they take courses and they can design their own program of wellness. And I did that, it was last year. That's the most recent one I did within the area of wellness. But I've done a fair bit of corporate and an institutional training. I worked with Twitter, Google, Airbnb, Dropbox, and I've done quite a number of workshops and courses that have to do with team building, collaboration, and creative thinking.
Oh, yeah. So, great for that.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's the best, you know?
It's really funny because, you know, improv is a thing that people who are already interested in doing theatrical things get involved in. Like, we're already since a young age, or rather, if you enjoy creative things, or if like that's what you're on. But, you know, some of these other people, their skill set or the thing that they focused on, you know, computers or, you know, learning how to work in sales or any number of the corporate offices that like I've worked with, you know, and it's like when you go in and try to show them these concepts, it's like, what? I didn't even know that was a thing a person could think. And it's like, how do you live in the world? Like, I think everybody needs to take an improv workshop, whether it's like, you know, hire somebody in your office or like, you know, take your own individual classes, because I mean, there's just so many benefits, you know, starting out with what you mentioned earlier, the idea of increasing your social circle. It's like, every time we all have to move sometimes, like even people, you know, like you'll get a new job and you have to move to another city. How are you going to meet people? You need to go where people are. So taking a class is a great way to do it, to connect with other people. But the fact that you also found a way to like connect with, you know, people in the most that have the most vulnerable issues, you know, it's perfect for vulnerability, for sure. It's just what a great way to use it.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And for me personally, it was so satisfying to see the change in them and see that growth. And it was quite, especially in the area of wellness. But even within, as you say, within the corporate areas, there everyone is working in cubicles, or even if they're within open spaces, they're still not really collaborating. And there's people work, you know, incredibly long hours, and they're in front of screens, and they're very static, and they're very much in their heads. And my approach to improv is quite physical, and so there's a lot of motion and a lot of activity, and gets them out of their heads, you know, right out of their and into the body and connecting with each other. And for me, my rule is it's the three C's add up to the fourth, and that is connection, concentration, communication. We need those three to be able to collaborate. So it's those first three to create the fourth, the true collaboration. And as we know, no one person's idea is going to be it's not going to be better than an idea created by, you know, two or three, because the power of minds working together in the group think that Del Close spoke about is infinitely more powerful than one person's vision. And that isn't to say that we shouldn't be singularly creative on our own, not at all, because by nature, I'm actually quite introverted. And that's different from shy, as we know. Because I need my own my own time for my own creativity. But what improv taught me was also the necessity and the power of collaboration. So that changed up everything for me completely.
You bring up collaboration, and it makes me think back to what you were talking about with reference to writing. Do you work in groups? Like, do you have a writing team that you work with, or do you have a crowd that you like when you're first developing ideas, you like bounce ideas off with them? How does collaborative writing work for you in the like real sense of you writing screenplays and plays and stuff like that? How do you really enact it?
Well, it depends. Each project is, you know, finds its own way, and you find your own way, your own mechanics of working with each particular kind of project. I have co-written screenplays with other writers, and I've sort of imposed the yes and rule between us when we're speaking about you know, obviously initially the structure of the story, and we have to agree upon, you know, the genre and, you know, the characters' journeys and what have you. But there's no saying no, you know, so there's that. I have, when I'm story consulting and script editing, it's quite a collaborative process, because I'm working not as a writer, but as a consultant to writers. So I have the listening skills are very, very, very important, theirs as well as mine. And I have actually written, since I've been here, co-written five live shows that were done with high-level, fairly advanced improv groups, where we devised plays, and in one particular, maybe, you know, one particular case, a sketch comedy show akin to SNL or Second City's kinds of shows, which were done through character-driven improvisations. And honing the characters and honing the improvisations, videotaping them, finding the ones that worked, transcribing from the improvisation, from the improvs on the video, transcribing it all, and then sitting down and writing it more collaboratively together. And then ultimately, it would be funneled through a head writer, which would be myself and perhaps another writer or another two writers. And then ultimately I would direct the shows, and they were at that point written. There were scripts. It was a written play or a written sketch comedy show. So I can't and wouldn't take sole writing credit for that, because all of the performers were also contributing writing through their character-driven improvisations. So that's how I used it in the theatrical context, and in screenwriting. Do I have a little group of writers that I work with? Not really. It's on a sort of a per per project basis. That said, right now I'm actually working on a TV series as head writer, an animated TV series for kids. And we have seed funding, development funding, and it's for preschool. And so it's inspired by a fairly successful computer game, and an Irish computer game. And what I'm doing is, you know, working collaboratively with the producers, a couple of young guys who actually took a writing course with me, and they liked the course, and I guess they liked me so much they wanted me to be involved in this project. And the reason why they took the course was they wanted to develop this TV series. And after a year of pushing the ideas around, and applying for funding, we got the funding, and so I collaborate with them. We bounce ideas back and forth when we get together, but ultimately I'm the head writer, so there's a collaborative aspect to that particular project.
Can you tell me the name of the animated series?
I can't yet because it's too early. It's early days.
Yet unnamed.
There is a name, but I can't tell you yet.
Let me know, because I have a 1.5-year-old child right now, so I am your prime audience.
Excellent. Well, by the time it hits the screens, your child would be probably, you know, the right age, or getting towards the right age, because it takes years to get something like this up and running.
It's
you got to be in it for the long haul, you know. So the improv, I mean, it has affected pretty much everything I do, you know, and that's in a positive way, totally positive.
Yeah. You mentioned that you also do dramatic acting, teaching, and perhaps performing. How do you use improv for that?
Well, I don't do much of that anymore, but I did for 21 years. In Toronto, I taught for 6 years, and then I taught when I got here. And I worked with I find improvisation a phenomenal tool for developing characters. So if you have a piece of text you're working with, a script, a play, and the one of the ways I've used improv is getting the performers, the student performers, to develop the characters based upon what's on the page, and then extrapolate using improvisation to help deepen their characterization. So they might do improvisations in that character. They may take the script and improvise perhaps what they might consider to be the subtext of the lines that are written, for the purpose of getting under the lines a little better, to understand the emotional meaning of the words written there, to basically own those words, to get those into their bodies. Because again, as I said earlier, it's all about characterization. And so one of the things I did when I was teaching dramatic acting was character acting. What is characterization? Because when I was in Toronto, the Second City experience opened up so much in me. I started to study every kind of acting I could. Not so much Shakespearean acting, but everything, film and television acting and voice and movement. And so I found that improvisation is a wonderful tool to use to develop characters and to help actors get under written text. And if they improvise around it a little bit, and they are also doing improvs in the characters, they tend to embody the characters more, and therefore those words they have not written themselves, they tend to own it. And of course, it's all, again, what Del said, it's about it being truthful. And when we watch a drama, you know, when we watch something, whether it is dramatic or comedic, what are we looking to do? We're looking to believe what's up there for a brief moment, to suspend our disbelief and to believe it. Well, therefore, it has to be truthful. And if they, the performer, don't believe it, neither will we. Yeah. That's how it works in here. Yeah.
Yeah. So in your Dawson Drama Works company. You said you're not teaching as much dramatic acting right now. Is
no.
the focus of your company improv workshops and for performers and companies?
Yes, it is. In the improv area, it is. And it's also, I'm teaching writing now. And writing, yeah, yeah. And as I said, I just finished a course last night for a company called Animation SkillNet, who are a training facility here in Ireland.
So you taught a writing course, like, in a corporate workshop setup?
Yeah, yeah.
Huh. Did you teach them how to write comedy, or did you help them write what their business was?
Well, it wasn't really for business, really. This is a company, one of a number of them, that is set up for the purpose of training in the media arts. So it can be in animation, it can be live action, it can be television, it can be film. Where the areas that I teach in are in storytelling and screenwriting. I'm starting a workshop in 2 weeks. I rather a course in a couple of weeks, teaching a course in feature film writing. And yes, I did teach design and facilitate a course in writing comedy. And I didn't use improvisation in that, though I did talk a lot about improvisation. But it is, you know, the areas of comedy, the styles of comedy, why we laugh. First and foremost, what happens within our bodies, and then we studied but that was all writing comedy for media, for the media arts, film or TV, and so there's also a component of those courses is the screenplay, the language of a screenplay, story structure, you know, and those things are common regardless of tone, whether it's dramatic or comedic. So that is another area in which I teach in. So my areas of focus in teaching is improvisation for anybody who wants to come and try it, within the areas of wellness, within the areas of corporate and institutional, as well as I teach writing. But the writing I teach, as I said, is within the media arts. So it's film and television writing. Dramatic and comedic. So, and again, as I said, I haven't done anything for a while because I'm actually quite busy with my own writing in addition to the teaching. So,
yeah, sounds sick.
I don't sleep very much. So,
does the improv help to keep the ideas flowing? I mean, you mentioned that you don't perform as much anymore, but I know that once you ignite that improv part of your brain, the ideas just flow. It's hard. I could see you not sleeping since, you know, you're spending half your time teaching other people how to do the writing, and then you're so inspired by talking to them and working with them that you're like, but wait, I have my ideas now.
Yeah, I know. I teach evening workshops, which is great for other people, and it's great for me, but then I don't get to sleep till 3 or 4 in the morning.
Totally.
Because I'm so revved up, you know, from the dopamine, the neurotransmitter, neurotransmitters going on in my brain, and I'm tripping, you know, on the serotonin and the adrenaline, and my everything's firing on all cylinders, and my body's exhausted and my brain is just getting started.
Yeah. I don't know why people think that creative people should be working the night shift. Never. No, thank you.
Never.
You know,
no.
Like, can I have a 9 to 5? You know what I mean? Like, I remember hearing some interview with somebody that was on SNL that was like, yeah, we legitimately could do this 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. They just choose to not show up until like 5 p.m. and then work until midnight. That's their decision.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy.
Why?
You know, I don't know, you know. I remember in the days when I was hanging around, you know, Second City, Toronto. And I was there when Mike Myers was on stage and he did Wayne for the first time in a sketch, Wayne of Wayne's World, you know. And everybody that I knew involved in Second City would be after the shows, you know, the main show, there'd be an improv set, and then they'd be at the bar, and then the after hours clubs. And so you're basically like, you know, on a night shift because you're cranked up afterwards. And the last thing you're going to do is you want to go to bed. You want to keep it going. You want to keep the buzz going.
Sure, but like, don't forget, like, everybody's in their 20s in this story. Like, when you're in your 20s, sure. Like, working late at night, going out drinking, like, spending all night in the diner, spitballing ideas. Yeah, 100%.
Yes.
But like, I'm talking living this for a life, because you and me, I'm 40, so I don't know how old you are. You don't have to tell me. But like, I know that you're not 20, right? So like, you know, I was like, context clues. You've been in Dublin for 19 years. Okay, all right. You, Mike Myers, was at Second City when you took classes there in your 20s. I'm just putting things together. But regardless, what I'm saying is, you're still doing it. We're both still doing it. How?
Absolutely.
Are you doing it?
I don't know. And I have no idea. And every so often I get so tired, I say, I'm not going to do this anymore. No way. I'm not going to do this. This is it. This is enough. And then after a few weeks, a month or so, I got a little crazy and I have to do it again. But, you know, I've been reading about Alan Alda, right? And he's still doing it. He's in his 80s, you know? Mm-hmm. And you know what I think? I think it's the fountain of youth.
Mm-hmm.
I think it keeps you young. You know,
I think he's like us, though, and he like got bit by the improv bug early. Like, hell, yeah. He was one of the first people to be bit by the improv bug. They were all like, hey, what do you think about improv? And he was all like, I'll do it. And then there goes the rest of his life. You know,
there you go.
And, you know, doing it all the time. You're right. It is a fountain of youth because, you know, it allows you to see people of all ages as human beings, as opposed to pop culture, which puts us into little groups where it's like the kids, they like this, and then the tweens, they like this, and then 20 somethings like this, and you're like, but maybe we like different things. Since I started watching kids shows with my kid, I'm like, these are pretty good. I know, like, that's why I was like, tell me the name of your show, I'm dying to watch it, you know, like, now I'm into that just because it happens to be, you know, the exciting thing around me. But I feel like we all push ourselves into little boxes and say, well, I'm 40 now, so I guess I should do important adult things, you know.
Right.
And Alan Alda is a perfect example of not doing that. Like,
you know how many of those 40-something people I have come to my courses and say, I'm just so unhappy and bored and I need something. And they're up playing and running around like and acting like children again. And they've forgotten that this is a natural thing that they did way back when, because nobody has to teach a kid how to play. We all knew how to. All baby animals play. That's how we learn, you know? Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's the most natural thing in the world.
Absolutely. Whenever I teach improv, I like to tell people that they have improv as an inherent ability. It's in there and you have it. It's just when you know, like, it's the difference between a kid in middle school and a kid in high school. There's a moment when those stupid hormones come in and tell us we got to think about other quote unquote more important things. And then we stop playing and we start worrying what other people think of us and how we're going to appear. And I say, you know, you got to let that go. Let's all pretend that we are not bogged down by the fact that we think each other are going to make fun of each other. And instead, let's just like have a good time and let's actively not make fun of each other so we can have a good time. I mean,
that's the thing is, I think, you know, there was a time when you and I were, you know, we were running around like little egomaniacs and, you know, we were just emotionally there all the time because we were only developing, you know, our brains and we were socialized. We were taught to fit in. We're taught to behave. Act your age, and all these sayings that will, you know, run through our heads all of our lives. And And that's fine. We have to go through those stages. And you're absolutely right about the teen years. You know, that's where there's we learn about peer pressure. We have to fit in, but we also want to be ourselves. We have to and all of that. And I think a lot of it starts then, those feelings. I taught improv to 12-year-olds who were the first year students first year secondary school students, and a very forward-thinking teacher brought me in as part of the orientation process of the first, you know, that's done during the first few weeks while they're in school. This is a new school and a lot of the new faces, and they're there, but they're at that age, you know, and the 12-year-old today is like the 13 or 14-year-old from years ago. They're pretty mature, and they're all, some of them are way too cool for school already. And so I did a lot of improv games with them to get them to bond and to hopefully not bully each other and make fun of each other, to teach the yes and rules, to teach compassion, to try to get them to understand such things. Because one of the things I love to do in my workshops is get people to play outside of their age range. One of the things I love about improv is it's not going to happen in film and television acting. You're going to have about a 7-year age range that you can play within. But in improv, you can play any age you want. You know, you can play a little kid. You can play an old person. When I was on Second City and we were doing an afternoon soiree show in the main stage at the old Fire Hall Theater, which is gone now. And that's the stage that, to name drop, John Candy, Catherine O'Hara, Dan Aykroyd. In fact, Dan Aykroyd was on the main stage there when John Belushi came up to cast him in Saturday Night Live. And I was doing a sketch that I was only in my early 20s, and I was playing an 85-year-old Jewish man. I'm not Jewish. I'm only starting to look like that guy now, you know? And it was so much fun to do something like that, you know? And just to play an age that I wasn't, and hopefully I'll reach. And then I've got people in my workshop now who are well into their 40s and 50s playing kids. And I say, you can do this in improv. You can play an animal. You can play an idea.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I love that. I love when I get them to the point or when I talk to students and they like open their minds to being concepts.
Yeah.
It's like, why don't you guys just, you know, or you can be anything at all. Be spices. Go. Yeah. Like, okay, you're cumin. Go.
Yeah.
Like, what's that like? Who's that person like?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I love it. It is super fun, and it, like, really allows you to open your brain to, like, imagining characterizations both in a generalized way. Like you're able to see how doesn't matter where you're from or what your skin color is or what how much money you have, we all have the same problems and the same journeys and the same interests and stuff like that. And so in an effort to the beauty of being able to play an idea or an animal or something like that allows you to play with the idea of stereotypes and use them and flip them on their head to be like, look at how silly this is. Or,
absolutely,
you know, this means something different when you see it through the eyes of this character than, you know. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of, I feel like, personally, I've noticed, and I don't know how Ireland is, but right now there's a lot of, like, line drawing in society here in the U.S. There's a lot of, like, this group is this way, and this group is that way, and if you're not like this, then you're not part of it. And that's all the adults trying to make sense of stuff, and I'm trying to continue to play improv and say, but isn't that just like this thing? Like, I always try to think of funny satire parody things for...
Yes.
When something horrible happens, like some political thing that everyone's freaking out about, I'm like, isn't that just like when two kids don't want to share? Or, like, you know, just little things to make it like, guys, it's so simple. It's easy. Yeah. Let it go. Yeah, they're fighting, but they'll get over it.
It's true. You're right. It is so simple. If we make it complicated,
yeah.
You know, but... We do. You know, this thing called life is a beautiful dance. It really is. Here, it's a quite a bit more relaxed society, and I've watched it over 19 years become a far more multicultural society, which is very, very exciting because Toronto was and is a very multicultural place. And I've watched that occur here. Ireland being part of the EU and a lot of EU people coming here. And so, and yet there's a quite a relaxed feel about the place, which I love because Toronto, for all that it's worth, was a manically busy place. And I spent a lot of time in New York City, and that's that redefines a manically busy place. And so, and here, I find this the sense of humor here. It's one of the things that attracted me, particularly in Dublin. And so, the interesting thing about improvisation here that I'm discovering is that I'm getting a lot of non-nationals, a lot of people who aren't Irish, taking the courses. And why? To meet people, to for all the same reasons that we've discussed, right? And also, you can do, within the context of a class or a course, you can do a scene that is satirical, where you can take a topic that's in the news that is very, you know, difficult perhaps to discuss, but you can play with it through the use of satire. And of course, Ireland is famous for satire. One of the greatest satirists that ever lived was Irish, Jonathan Swift. Mm-hmm. Who wrote Gulliver's Travels. In fact, the Jonathan Swift Annual Festival is coming up soon, which I might attend some of the events. And he was an extraordinary satirist, as well as an amazing humanist. And again, we come back to, you know, the humanity, I think, that improv teaches you. And it does teach you about inclusiveness. It does teach you about equality. But you're learning all of these things while you're having fun. The most important thing. To play, you know. So, yeah, what you're doing? Yes, you're right. There's a lot of line drawing, more so now than ever I've seen in my life, and it's not a good thing. So people like us have to push against that.
Yeah,
I think. And what's the best way with comedy? If you can, you know. Do you remember? I said this in class the other night. It was a line from a Mary Poppins song. A spoonful of sugar helps a medicine go down.
Yeah.
So if you can if you can temper the message with laughter, people will buy it. They'll listen to it. They'll at least listen to it. Okay? And maybe you can change them in the best way.
Yeah, I mean, you got to try to. I figure I'm going to be around for a while. I want to have a pleasant time. I don't need everything to be so serious and angry all the time. So, yeah, I keep trying to infuse comedy into all the things. I think that spoonful of sugar is it's a smart relationship to that. Like that's exactly the line. Totally.
Yeah, well, life is way too serious to take seriously. You know, it's
yeah.
Yeah, it is. So, you know, so I was very, very fortunate that my friend asked me to go to Second City and take those classes because it really did change up everything for me. I mean, I was a visual artist and an illustrator, graphic designer, and I loved doing that. And my thing was going to the theater and I loved the movies, but I never entertained the notion of performing or writing movies. And again, that happened because, you know, I needed to meet people and develop skills that I knew that were lacking. And so when I came here, there wasn't very much of it. And I saw, okay, this is an opportunity to do exactly the same thing, to meet people. But this time I'm on the other side. I'm teaching it. And it was great. And I did some performing back then. And I can honestly say I'll probably do this till the day I drop. I can't imagine why I wouldn't.
I hope you do. So, that sounds like an excellent path.
Yeah, likewise. Yeah.
So. Absolutely. Well,
so have you got any workshops on the go right now?
I don't. I don't have any. I haven't traveled in a little while. I'm just here in Austin. I will. I run a sketch show that's every other month called The Neighborhood. And cool. So I lead that I'm the head writer and producer of that thing. And right now that's my main focus, as far as creation goes. And, you know, I, since being home with the baby, I've had a little bit less time to go out and teach workshops. But, you know, since I've been meeting people with these phone interviews, I've made a couple of good connections. And, you know, I think I'm going to try to start traveling a little bit more. You know, I do have a new baby and family that would like to see him. So I'm starting to do the family tour with a side action of improv workshops. So.
Very nice. Well, come this way. Come this way. I'll host a workshop for you. We'll do something together.
Yeah. What's the scene like there? I mean, are you like the main improv place to take classes?
I'm not necessarily anymore. But it's actually grown enormously here, and there's actually quite a lot going on. And I've been doing it consistently, and way back when there wasn't a whole lot of action other than me, but now there's all kinds, and the more the merrier is what I say. So the scene has actually grown enormously in the 18-19 years. So yeah, there's a good scene, I think. You know, I mean, it's not London, it's not Chicago, it's not Toronto or New York, but it is definitely growing. There's no question about it. No question. And when we do the gigs that I do with my groups for my workshops, the place is always packed. You know, it's a lot of fun. So, you know, get over here. I don't know. We'll do something together. Just say yes and. Yeah,
cool. Absolutely. It's funny, I'm always talking to people about how they maintain it for their lives, you know, like do it forever. You know, how do you keep getting out there and doing it? And, you know, I always say to people, you know, occasionally you're going to have an ebb and a flow that stops you from doing as much creativity as you were doing before. We all have, you know, relationships or a job that distracts you or some other life event that kind of puts you off track or something. And for me, having the baby has just sort of put me in kind of a holding period of like, okay, let me learn more about what I'm interested in. And thankfully, I have this whole rig at my home to have phone interviews with people. So I get to talk to people about improv every day. I do book interviews like every day. It's crazy. But it's great to talk to people and to hear about what it's like in other cities and to be inspired by stuff to do. Like, I'm totally, like, I have been thinking about going up to Toronto to take workshops at Second City for forever. And I'm like, hearing you talk about it with reference to how it's helped you teach screenwriting and stuff like that, I'm like, I should take it. You know?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just so much out there to do, and it's really great, and I want the audience who listens in your area to be able to take advantage of taking classes with you, or people that are in other cities who maybe don't have this stuff going on, to hear people say, that guy did it. If he can do it, I want to do it. Well, I can do it too. And that's the part for me that I just want to empower people.
That I couldn't agree with you more. And there's nothing more gratifying than doing that. You know, there are a number of troops have been born out of my workshops. That is thrilling.
I know.
Absolutely thrilling. Friendships have been forged within the workshops. How exciting is that? That's what living is about.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Wonderful. So it's been wonderful talking to you. Thank you so much for asking.
Yeah. Thank you so much. And, you know, enjoy the rest of your day and probably all the hard work and teaching you still have to do tonight.
Not tonight. Right now I'm off to the pub.
Okay. Relax. Good. I'm glad you have a
I'll raise one to you, okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. And as the Irish say,
he's got three classes right after he gets off the phone.
well, the Irish way of saying cheers is sláinte, okay?
Ooh.
So I say sláinte to you.
Thanks for listening to Yes But Why Podcast. Check out all our episodes on yesbutwhypodcast.com or Check out all the content on our network, HC Universal, at hcuniversalnetwork.com.